When you think work, you think boots. You think boots, you think Ariat. You think grit, concrete, rain, and heat. And boots that never back down from any of it. You think comfort and durability that hold up on the job, off the clock, and every step in between. Because the day doesn't end when the job does. And from overtime to off-duty, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, and always back you up. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find yours at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Don't sweat the technique.
The Killer Bees are live inside the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Wildcat Golf Club, for ESPN Houston's Occasional Invitational. Now back to Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Thank you to Carbach, Brown Bag Deli, Valencia's Tex-Mex Garage for all they did to make the Occasional Invitational possible occasionally. Also, thank you to Aqueduct Plumbing Company, Beatbox, Burritos, Amex Pharmacy, and Dream Rate Mortgage. Could not have been possible without their generous support. 713-780-ESPN, HRNP listener line, 713-780-3776. Texter, Steve Kerr wasn't a starter on two of the Dynasty franchise teams in history. Korver started on non-playoff teams. You sound ridiculous. What are we doing here? Like, are we're comparing Reed Sheppard to Steve Kerr? Like, if Reed Sheppard becomes the sharpshooter off the bench to Michael Jordan's dynastic run, cool, I guess. But that's very hard to put that player into that position. If Reed Sheppard had the statistical career of Steve Kerr, we would not be happy at the end of the day. If we eliminated the clutch moments, the team success that he had, because it wasn't Steve Kerr that was carrying the Bulls. It wasn't Steve Kerr when he was playing 8 minutes a game carrying the Spurs. It was Jordan and Duncan and Robinson, and I could go on and on. Certainly wasn't Steve Kerr. If Reed Sheppard's career is the same statistically as Steve Kerr, we would not be happy.
No, I think the best way to kind of surmise this is what are we trying to say would be a bust, right? What, as opposed to, because he's the number
Steve
three
Kerr.
Pick. And I think that in your opinion, it's Steve Kerr. I think that, again, it used to be that if you were taking a top five pick that you were almost guaranteed, unless you were Darko Milicic, that you were going to be a guy that probably was going to have a long NBA career with, you know, like you said, a lot of starts and the ability to be a key member of a team. But nowadays, there aren't the same kind of guarantees, and it's not just the number three pick. It's even higher than that. And we just said the guys that were drafted this year, we don't know if Shea and the guys that were drafted ahead of him are going to ever turn out to be any good either, because it's the entire draft process has shifted based on guys and what they could become as opposed to guys and what they already had become and should become. And I think that the texter's point is right, that if you get on the right squad and all you do is shoot and you're a sharpshooter, you can carve out a long career and you don't have to play a lot of minutes and you can be part of a winning team. But as a player, if you're expecting that player to be more than just a shooter, and again, I also am going to be the first guy to say, I got to see more of Reed Sheppard shooting the ball before I put him in the same category as even Steve Kerr or Steph Curry, which a lot of people like to do, or anywhere in between. Like, he shot the ball well in college. He was the best college shooter a year ago. But he hasn't shot that way in the NBA. And we've questioned, like, his decisions when he shoots the ball. And he did it again last night on the break where he just yanked it. And I think that those things are still things that have to develop. And so I think the jury is still out before I even say, you know, he's a bust or not. But do I think that right
now? Well,
it's
not the conversation anymore. The conversation is, if he had Steve Kerr's career, would that be a bust? Steve Kerr's career high in points was 8.5. And he played 25 minutes a game that year. Now, he was a great shooter over the course of his career because he didn't play a whole lot. He was very selective with those shots. If Reed Sheppard's best year is 8.5 points a game, if his career average is 6 points a game, is that a bust or is that not a bust?
It would be a disappointment.
Yeah, I think everybody would say that.
Yeah, like, I think I would determine a bust, and again, it's just the semantics of the term. A bust to me is a guy that's in the league for a year or two and just completely you realize he isn't worthy of playing in this league, and he probably never should have been drafted where he was.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Like, if he played 15 years, it's hard to call a guy a bust.
Right.
But if he's averaging 6 points a game for his entire career with his best year being 8.5, we would not be happy with that. And he's not finishing his career in Houston either. Like, if that's the numbers he's putting up, he wouldn't be a Rocket for more than 4 years.
No, that's a guy that ends up becoming Steve Kerr-esque.
Yeah, he's a journeyman.
And being picked up by, you know, a really good team or two that just needs you to do one thing. Just whether it's, you know, we see guys all the time that come off the bench to just defend or to just come off the bench and shoot. Like, there's guys that have a very specific role that are normally sought after by good teams on cheap salaries to kind of fill out a roster and also potentially be a rotational player. But you're not going to be a starter. You're not going to get average 10-plus points a game. You're not going to do a lot of things. And I do think from your standpoint, yeah, it's definitely going to be a disappointment if coming in as the number three pick that he ends up, you know, with the stats of a Steve Kerr. But if it means that also his stats include multiple championship rings now, is that a bust? That's why I just don't think it's a bust.
Yeah, that's why I think you have to get rid of the career accolade, because a lot of that is good fortune. Like, if Steve Kerr played anywhere else than Chicago and San Antonio, he wouldn't have had those moments either. Like, do we think Steve Kerr was the reason they won a bunch of titles? No. He had one big shot. You know what I mean? Steve was a point guard. Assist was his game. Okay, Steve Kerr's career high in assist was 2.5. So, yeah, that was really, really a good part of his game there. Reed is also a point guard. Like, he's also a point guard. It's the same type of player. Shoot first, point guard that really doesn't do a whole lot of passing, doesn't play a whole lot of defense. 713-780-3776. People overrate Kerr as a player because he played alongside Jordan. Before coaching, we would have no idea who he was if it wasn't for being on the Bulls. The Spurs, too. He was part of those Spurs teams. Jasper, he went from being compared to Michael Jordan to being compared to Steve Kerr. That is quite the range. At this point, let's just compare Shepard to literally every single player on the 90s Bulls. Who was the guy that won the three-point contest for the Bulls but, like, never played
Craig Hodges.
Games? Was it Hodgins?
Craig Hodges won back-to-back three-point shooting. We had him in Milwaukee when I was a ball boy.
Really? That's who that's who Reed Shepard's going to be. That's my comp for Reed Shepard is Craig Hodges.
I will say this. Craig Hodges had some good years in Milwaukee. Yeah, in Chicago, he was exactly what he was another.
Like, he didn't even play, right?
He was a gun for hire. He would just come off the bench and shoot threes. That's what you're supposed to do.
They aren't using him in the way he's used to thriving and being successful. He'll flourish in another system. He can't play defense, so he's not going to play for Ime. Ocho, is Reed Shepard going to be Jimmer Fredette? I think it's in play. I think it's possible. Todd, the show says, enough talk about Reed Shepard. Can we talk about the greatness that is Cam Whitmore? 40 minutes, zero turnover. See, I think that's what's kind of getting lost here, is that, like, in yesterday's game, if I looked at one young player's performance that I was the most encouraged with, I was more encouraged with Cam Whitmore's than Reed Shepard's. I mean, Cam went for 27-11, didn't turn it over, blocked three shots, dished out three assists, and played some defense for you, too. Like, that was very impressive from Cam.
To me, you know that, you know, it was like almost a proud papa moment. I've been so deeply in Cam Whitmore's corner, just begging for him to get it straight between his ears. The rebounding was impressive to me. He went up in traffic multiple times and used his athleticism to get a rebound. This is who I've expected to see from Cam Whitmore from the minute that the Rockets drafted him. I expected to see all of these attributes on display, and I just haven't seen it yet, and the majority of it is because of what's between his ears. And last night, he finally seized yet another, maybe last, I don't know if this is the last opportunity or not, but we had been talking about he was in the doghouse again.
Yeah.
And he absolutely showed out last night.
Yeah. See if he gets any run today. Todd's like, he's going to play 4 minutes today with Ime.
That missed dunk last night did tick me.
Oh, that was annoying.
Oh,
that was annoying.
God, it bothered me.
Yeah, it was annoying. 713-780 ESPN. Yeah, he just lost half a step too far, lost it a little bit. It's like, what could go wrong went wrong on that play.
Yeah.
Out to the HRMP listener line, Kevin. You're in the Hive. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, fellas. How y'all doing?
Great.
Hi, Kevin.
Man, look, I've got a couple of points. I'm going to start with Reed first. Look, with the way the game is played today versus how it was played back then, I mean, I'm not going to say you can double Reed's average per game if you're going to compare him to the likes of a Kerr, saying he only – you know, for a career average about 8 points, you can say 16. No, I say give him a third or another fourth of that and say he averaged 12 points a game.
I think it's fair.
Would that be sufficient? But what I would also question is the analytical way the game is played now with all the threes that are taken. You know, once the kid matures, and I mean, look at Green and where he's come from at this point in his career to where he was a couple of years ago. Man, you got to be patient when you go out and draft young players. I don't care what the sport is, you got to be patient. Look at all the years guys spent in the minors in baseball. Even from a football perspective, man, guys ain't coming out, getting into the league in the NFL and just lighting it up immediately on the offensive side. You got to give them a minute to mature, to let them get a feel for the speed and the strength of guys around them, and let them gain some of that old man strength and get better at the same time. And as it relates to Cam, my last point is Cam reminds me of the typical AAU 7-on-7 kid that's out there today that's not being corrected by these coaches, that when you do say something to them, they pout, but they're so damn talented, they keep them on the floor because at any point he could go off for 40 a night. Not saying he will in the league for 40 a night, but on the AAU circuit or even playing 7-on-7 football, man, I've watched these kids as an official cuss out adults or say something out of line to some of these coaches, man, and they never even respond back. And that's the biggest problem with some of these pre-Madonna already kids coming into the professional ranks. When you get a coach like Ime who puts his foot down, they have trouble adjusting to discipline. And that's all I got, fellas.
No, appreciate the call. Look, I think, Jeremy, you know, I've preached a lot of this, that I think that Cam Whitmore is the victim of the AAU circuit. And, you know, at a certain point, to add to that, but what I've said previously is when you treat a guy like he is the man from the time he's in eighth grade and you constantly give him the ball and get out of the way, and now high schools are fighting for trying to recruit kids just like colleges are, and they say, come to my high school and we'll give you the ball and get out of the way. And then he plays 1 year either in the G League or in college and they give him the ball and get out of the way. He's always the best player on his squad, so you respect it. He gets to a point like in the NBA when he's no longer the best player on the floor, and he still wants to get the ball and get out of the way, and everybody get out of the way, and he's hell-bent and very headstrong to the point where he's never had to do anything but that, so he's reluctant to do what you're expecting Cam Whitmore to do, which is kind of take a step back, try to blend in and realize maybe there's a time down the road where you can have a bigger role, but if you want to play, you got to do the things that the coach is asking you to do, even if it's not what you're used to.
Yeah, Ime's trying to teach him how to play winning ball. And I think that's why he gets benched at times. I think it's why it leads to fan frustration, because he shows what he's capable of doing. You'd like that guy to play 30 minutes a night. But Ime also, I think, is playing the long game with Cam Whitmore, and I think that it's going to be in his best interest. Now, like the rookies coming into the league, because I agree with most of what Kevin said, and I think it's a fair point about how scoring's up now versus whenever Kerr was back and, you know, whenever he was in his playing days. But let's not forget that Jalen Green averaged 17 points as a rookie. Like, he was scoring a bunch, and I wasn't a good shooter, wasn't a great, like, winning basketball player, but he was doing numbers. And I think that the rookie thing kind of differentiates based on sport. I think it's harder for rookies these days in the NBA because they're coming to the league earlier than, like, back in the 90s when they were staying in college or the 80s when they were staying in college. But you see some rookies that have some pretty good immediate success. Now, I think it's more prevalent in football than it is in basketball. Like, look at the last few rookie of the years. Jaden Daniels had pretty good success. C.J. Stroud, pretty good success. Garrett Wilson, Ja'Marr Chase is a rookie? You kidding me? Like, I think it's kind of specific to the sport. I think football players have more success now as rookies. Basketball players, I think it's the other way around. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRP, listener line. Let's get to cash them or trash them. What are you cashing? What are you trashing? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Prepare for overreaction on my mark.
It's that time of the week where overreactions are welcome.
They say Muhammad Ali was the greatest of all time, but he never fought Cassius Clay. What was he afraid of? Boom! Hot take!
It's cash 'em.
That is so good, but that's exactly right.
Or trash 'em.
This is your hot take.
Seems like an overreaction.
With a killer bees.
Give us a hot spoonful of your opinion.
Let's cash them or trash them. 713-780-ESPN. What are you cashing? What are you trashing? 713-780-3776. Blankers, you want to do the honors?
Sure. Did I do Cam Smith last week? I don't remember if I did it or not.
I don't know, man.
I don't recall.
You.
I'm gonna say that Cam Smith is with the Astros by June 1st.
Okay. Oh yeah, I think we did. I think you did do that.
Did we?
Yeah, but no one remembers.
Okay, because I had a list of mine and I didn't remember if we got to that one.
I'll trash it. I think we overrate spring training numbers a lot. I remember not that long ago where Justin Dearden was the next Kyle Tucker. Had a great spring training, didn't make the team. Everybody was mad. Oh no, how did you pick Corey Jolks? Go Cougs. Over Justin Dearden, I can't believe you would make such a stupid decision because Dearden put up huge spring training numbers and then Dearden was released from baseball like 6 months ago. Like, I think we overrate spring training numbers. I'm not saying that Cam Smith's not a great prospect. I love USS Cam. But I don't – like, he doesn't have many at-bats above single A. Like, he needs some seasoning. Yes, Dana Brown will fast-track players. I also think the other players are going to have to struggle. I think a lot has to happen. I think the Astros might do the service time manipulation. I'm going to trash it.
Yeah, I want you to be right, Joel. I think this team needs a player like Cam Smith. I'm not in love with the players that will currently be above him on the roster. But I think the kind of tell with the Astros is his minor league appearances, and correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I've seen in the box scores, he's mostly been at third base. So if they were going to make room for him on the opening day roster or at least fast track him to be up here early in the season, I think he'd be getting more outfield reps because that would be his quicker path to the major league. So I'll go ahead and trash it.
Yeah, or Isak would be getting reps at second.
Right. One of the two.
One of the two.
Yeah, and I think that, like we've seen in the past, I think there's a good chance that when he goes to Sugar Land to start the year that they're going to play him at multiple positions, and probably one of them is going to be right field.
I don't know if he starts in Sugar Land. I think there's a very good chance he starts in Corpus Christi.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, I think there's a very good chance he starts Corpus Christi. I think there's a very good chance he doesn't get moved around. I think that they might just say, hey, go play third base, play there for a couple of months, and then we'll see where we're at in a couple of months. He played 5 games in Double-A last year. Like, yeah, he's only played 32 minor league games in his career. Five of those were at the Double-A level. The rest were below Double-A. Like, the guy needs some minor league reps.
I don't disagree with you, but I also know that Dana's history is kind of like he'll fast-track guys. And you know, if he likes a guy, he's gonna push him up. And look at how quickly Bryce Matthews was pushed up the ladder last year. I just think that if he's hitting in major league camp, if he continues to do this, I think he could start in Sugar Land.
I mean, Matthews played 12 games at AAA, and he's 22 years old, and he's like he was drafted in 2023. So like the comp on that would be Cam Smith makes it to AAA this year.
Yeah, okay. I think there's a chance he starts in Sugar Land.
Okay. That's not what you said originally, but
not what I said originally, but I think that where he starts in the minor leagues, I was anticipating he starts in Sugar Land.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a strong take on that one way or the other. If you held a gun to my head, do I think he starts in Corpus or Sugar Land? I would go Corpus for a little bit before he gets called up to Sugar Land. That's not really as important. The other guy that was known to be fast-tracked was Michael Harris in Atlanta. Like, they fast-tracked him. Harris was drafted out of high school, so it's a little bit different than college, obviously. He was drafted out of high school in 19, eventually got called up to the big league team at 21 and 22. So 2.5 years after he was drafted out of high school, which is pretty quick for a high school player.
Oh,
but high school,
quick,
college, very, you know, it's different. It's apples to orange. My cash him or trash him also deals with Cam Smith. I saw Swab. Swab has been banging the table for Cam Smith as a rookie of the year candidate. Which, by the way, Brian, we talked about that yesterday, getting the extra comp pick.
Right.
If you win rookie of the year. Apparently there is a caveat to that rule where you have to break camp with the team.
Oh, okay. Well, that
I didn't realize that. But
we'll throw that out then.
Yeah, yeah. So my cash him or trash him involving Cam Smith. Cam Smith has a better chance to be the 2026 AL Rookie of the Year than the 2025 AL Rookie of the Year.
I'll cash that. I think just based on the conversation we just had, I don't know how many at-bats he's going to get with the Astros this year. I don't know, you know, the reasonable amount of games that he might be in. But I think if he plays, I think the following year in 26, I think he'll play a significant amount of games for the Astros, in my opinion. And I think that he'd have a better chance, so I'll cash that.
If he's up by June 1st, he wouldn't be a rookie in 26.
Right, but I mean, there's a chance I could be wrong, too. I just think that you know, what's the amount of time that you have, or what's the prerequisites? Because a lot of guys play like a half a season in the bigs.
130 at bats.
Okay. Because yeah, I mean, I know that they always believe if you're going to call somebody up, they're going to play. But yeah, I mean, maybe I'm wrong on the June 1st, but I would say there's a better chance if he's going to win Rookie of the Year, it's going to be in 2 years.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I think so, Brian.
Yeah, no, given in light of what you just told us about the
Can win Rookie of the Year without that. That's to get the compensation.
No, obviously, of course. What I'm saying is, in light of what you just said, I don't think there's any rush to bring him up. So unless the outfield is just, you know, just a complete disaster beyond what we could even fathom at this moment, I don't think they rush him up, and they probably do try to manipulate his service time clock and bring him up, you know, middle July, August at that point, in which point he would retain his rookie status. So I'll go ahead and cash it as well.
Brian, what do you got?
Listening to Lance these last couple days after he got back from the combine, I'm getting more and more convinced hearing him talk about not only his own evaluations of the quarterbacks in this draft class, but also what he's hearing from other scouts, from the team executives he's talking to. Obviously, you know, beyond Chris Bowler, he's not naming a whole lot of names, but I'm becoming convinced this is going to turn into a QB draft class where you only get one quarterback taken in the first round. That, of course, being Cam Ward out of Miami. And Shador, like, once you get past, you know, teams in the top 10, you start to get in some teams that either don't need a quarterback or maybe don't want to deal with the Deion Sanders media circus. So I think Shador ends up slipping into the early part of the second round.
Ooh, I'm going to trash spicy. That. Yeah, that is spicy. I'm trashing that because I think that teams are going to possibly – they can trade back in. They can trade up. They can get to where they need to get to if they're in need of a quarterback. And you look at teams like the Giants and teams that might or might not – take a quarterback high. If they don't and they realize Shador's still on the board, I think Raiders, Giants are all, if they don't take him right away, I think that they would trade back up to get him in the first round.
Yeah, I don't think he slips out of the first. I'm not a massive Shador guy, but slipping out of the first round entirely, I don't think so. Well, Levis did. Let's look. That happened to Will. I don't think Shador would do that. So I'm going to trash this one. I think he still goes first. Now, I think he could slide into the teens maybe the last half of the first round.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to go as far as saying the second. Texter, cash or trash, mainly for BMAC because I know the others don't watch as much. But Cena, the greatest heel turn in sports entertainment history.
So that still belongs to Hulk Hogan at the 1996 Bash at the Beach. But Cena's modern era last 10 years, I would say greatest heel turn during that time period.
Yeah, I would try it. It's got to be Hogan.
Yeah, Hogan's number one.
Yeah, I agree with you guys 100%.
Going to Hollywood. Ocho, cash or trash, the need for baseball prospects like Cam Smith to play in the minors. What's the harm in playing him in the majors? Even if he fails, he's not going to spontaneously combust or go into a state of depression. So cash or trash, the need for prospects that highly regarded to play in the minors.
I think there's always a need to get them some kind of experience because what Ocho fails to mention is you fast track a guy and it's too much for him too soon. And then it ruins them mentally and they never become the player they were supposed to be in the first place. So I think that there is something to getting them some minor league experience and not just, you know, completely taking him, drafting him, and then rushing him to the big leagues as quick as you can.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I trash this mostly.
Trash.
You never see it in the minors. It's very, very rare. I think the Angels did it with a guy. Didn't they do it with Zach Neto? I think they did it with Neto. I think Neto got, like, I don't think he spent much time in the minors. I think he spent very little. I think he was in the big leagues the same year he was drafted out of college. I'll have to double check.
So was Skeens, right?
Skeens was very quick. Skeens, I thought he was the next time. Year, though.
Yeah, I think Skeens was the next year because they wanted to, like, make sure his arm was okay, and he pitched a lot of innings at LSU.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think Neto was same year. Like I'm wondering if he even played in the minors at all. But the old story, there was two notable guys who were drafted and never played in the minors. One of them was Dave Winfield. That one turned out pretty good. Like Winfield was just fine. The other one was David Clyde, who was drafted by the Rangers, and they immediately called him up as like a you know, kind of a marketing thing, and that was a disaster. That did not work at all.
That was the one where he was a Sports Illustrated cover, and he was the sure thing of all sure things, and then never did it.
I'd be interested. I mean, I guess I could look it up, but I wouldn't have thought Larry Dirk would have spent much time in the minor leagues either, because I believe he made his debut at 18. Did he not?
Sounds
yeah,
right.
I think that
could
might
have
been be right. Yeah,
16 though.
Yeah, he could have been drafted. Yeah, depending on if he was young for the age or whatever. Yeah, so he probably spent a little bit of time in the minors, but he was very quick to get up to the majors.
That was like way back then too.
Yeah, so that'd be like, in the 60s, I guess.
Yeah, Durker made his big league debut at 17, apparently.
Oh, it was 7? Okay, see, I thought it was 18.
1964. He appeared in 3 games at the age of 17.
Unbelievable.
He pitched in 9 games in rookie ball.
And that was it before the
64.
Majors?
No, he was in 64. So, he pitched in the minors, but the same year he was signed professionally, he pitched in the bigs. That was
That's
1964,
unreal.
Though.
Like, crazy. Yeah, it's a different world. Different world.
Far different world. No, I think you need seasoning. I think a player needs seasoning. Because they can figure out your mistakes and like where you're awful, and then you never get better, you never improve. I think it's a terrible idea. I mean, other sports, they don't seem to have that issue.
No. I mean, we just kind of went
No, Neto, deep that was wrong about Neto. Neto played a year and a half before he got called up. I think the Angels did it with somebody, though.
That does sound vaguely familiar that there were – I think there were more pitchers than position players that got fast-tracked.
Yeah, it makes sense more for a position player. Cash or trash, Torchies is completely overrated.
I don't believe that I've had Torchies before, so I can't comment.
I like Torchies. I think Torchies is good.
Yeah, I guess it depends on what you would rate it, but I think it's good. So I don't think it's great, but it's good.
Texter says that Nolan Schwindle of the Angels is who I'm thinking of. Okay, there you go. Or Schonell. He said Nolan Schonell. That's who it was. I thought it was Neto for some reason. Cash or trash, Israel is a high school dropout. That's not very nice.
That's not nice at all. I'm trashing that.
He's not a high school dropout. David Clyde was a disaster and had major arm problems. I played high school baseball with his nephew. His nephew was pretty good. Ended up playing at Texas. What was his name? Garrett? I think his name was Garrett. Garrett Clyde? His name was Garrett Clyde. Cash or trash, that the Astros make it back to the ALCS after falling last year.
I will cash it. They'll get
I'm going to cash it, too. Bregman started out 2-for-38 in his first 40 at-bats. Start Cam now. Go Cougs. I'll cash the Go Cougs. Trash the start Cam now. I wanted to see him in the minors for a little bit.
Yeah, it's fine. I want to see him until June 1st.
All right, 713-780-ESPN. Let's go ahead and let's talk about Devontae Adams. Do you want Devontae Adams? Let's discuss. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Wildcat Golf Club, for ESPN Houston's Occasional Invitational. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Jets released Devontae Adams today. No surprise. No one was going to trade for that cap number. No one's going to claim him. So Devontae Adams is going to be a free agent. Texter, Devontae Adams will become the Texans' new receiver for next year. Devontae Adams might be a good pickup because the Jets and the Raiders, somebody's still on the hook for him. Well, somebody else will pay him. He'd be a free agent. He'd be able to negotiate a new deal altogether. Ocho, if the Texans could sign Adams and somehow draft Matthew Golden to replace Tank, I'd be over the moon. Where are you on Devontae Adams? Do you want the Texans to kick the tires here?
I think the price matters. I think if Devontae's still trying to collect the biggest check that he can get, then I don't want anything to do with Devontae Adams. I think if Devontae Adams is focused on winning and he wants to get in a good situation for both him and for the team that he goes to, and he's reasonable with the contract, and maybe you can give him a multi-year deal because of it, then I would love Devontae Adams. I think Devontae Adams has game left in his career. I think that he can play as a two. I think he'd be a phenomenal complement to Nico, simply because of the fact that, yes, he can still get down the field a little bit, but he can be a possession receiver. He's got great hands, and he's tough. And so the price matters to me the most. If I could get him for the same kind of money as we were talking about with Diggs and Deebo Samuel-type money, I would definitely consider it. I would like it to be a little less than that, but if you're in that – kind of 18 to 20, or that might be in the 20s, might be a little high, but if I can get him less than 20, I would definitely consider it.
Yeah, I want to get one of those veterans that gives you a discount to like 15 because I really don't want to spend more than 15. So like if it's Cup, cool. If it's Diggs, cool. If it's Davante Adams, cool. I saw a lot of people naysaying Davante Adams. Davante Adams still did numbers last year on two bad teams. He had 85 catches over 1,000 yards last year. He's 2 years removed from over 100 catches and 1,100 yards in 22, which is dating back sometime. He led the league in touchdowns. Like, he's a red zone machine. Where do the Texans have trouble this year? In the red zone. They would get to the red zone, and then they would stall out and have to settle for field goals. So you could do far worse than Davante Adams. I would certainly, if I'm Caserio, I would send out, you know, word to his representation. Hey, what's it going to cost? C.J. Stroud said he would love to throw the ball to Davante Adams. Would Davante Adams love to catch the ball from C.J. Stroud at, you know, $12 to $15 million, sweetheart deal, try to win a Super Bowl? No, that's a call that I make. I do think that they will be priced out. I think Davante probably still wants to play with Aaron Rodgers for some reason. Weird. But it's certainly a call that I'm making for Caserio because you have to do your due diligence, and he would absolutely help the Houston Texans.
I could see him going back to Green Bay before he plays with Rodgers again. I think that he has to at some point come to the realization that Rodgers, even if he plays one more year, you don't want to keep hitching your wagon to a guy that doesn't have his fastball anymore in terms of his overall game that he once had. I think in Green Bay he would be a great fit because they desperately need a wide receiver one. I don't know that he's still capable of being a complete wide receiver one, but I think that in that system with the other talent that they have, he'd be the perfect lead guy in that wide receiver room, and they're looking for that. But I would love him in Houston, and if you could get him for 2 years at 15 a year and he would lock in for 2 years and you want to put an option in that somehow, so if he really has a big year that we can, you know, he could get out, great, yeah. But I would love to have it.
I really would rather have it as a one-year deal because I'm looking at it more as like a mercenary, as a hired gun. But maybe it's one of those two-year non-guarantee second, although he would have difficulty agreeing to that. A texter, we know Adams is going to KC. Would love for him to be on the Texans, but they seem to be the target team for receivers looking for a championship, and we'll give a discount. See, I don't think that Davante Adams fits what Kansas City likes. I think Kansas City wants speed, quickness all over the field. I think they brought in Hopkins last year because they were desperate with all the injuries that they had. But you look at who they've brought in over the years at the receiver position, they're all very, very fast and very, very quick. I actually don't think Davante fits the Kansas City wide receiver profile.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people look at like maybe similar body type and think that Davante is like D-Hop. And I think that...
But D-Hop's because they were desperate. Like, they didn't sign D-Hop he was, like, you know, middle of the year where they had tons of injuries.
No, that's what I was going to say. I think Davante has a lot more left in the tank than D-Hop did.
Yeah.
But I don't think that Devontae's the kind of guy that fits, that goes to Kansas City and he becomes the kind of guy that, you know, he wants to have the year. Mahomes likes to spread it around. You know, Kelsey's still going to get plenty of looks, too. And I think that Davante would like to be in a system where he is kind of spotlighted more, too. But, yeah, I just don't think Kansas City is the right spot for him.
Davante would be a great pickup for the Texans, would fix the wide receiver debt for the year and maybe even the next 3 years. That's a bit lofty.
I'll tell you where he could go, Jeremy. Buffalo.
I don't know.
Plays in cold weather. Again, price matters, but he's played in the cold. He'd get a really good quarterback to throw to him. You know, he'd get a team that's capable of going to a Super Bowl.
Man.
I think that, and they need a receiver because Cooper's going to probably end up going somewhere else. I think he could fit in Buffalo.
I think he'd fit. It's just, it feels to me like Buffalo isn't committed to spending big money on wide receiver. Like, you know, the Diggs thing was probably like a separate case because they were just all fed up with each other. But then, like, they trade for Amari, they re-signed Shakir, they drafted Coleman. Like, they've been in, like, there's been connections with Hollywood Brown. I don't think that Buffalo is going to go big-name hunting at wide receiver. I think they're going to look for a guy who's a burner who can take the top off the defense. And their contract situation ain't great, too. So, like, throw that wrench into there. B. Hannon said he's going to go play for the Chargers. I did see where he would like to be on the West Coast, if we believe that rumor. B. Hannon says, what about Keenan Allen with Houston? I read, and look, this is just reports and rumors, so that, you know, a lot of times it aren't true. Keenan Allen only wants to play for either the Chargers or the Bears.
Huh.
Yeah, so that would be...
Would the Chargers be willing to take him back?
I mean, why not?
I don't know if it got messy or not when he left. I don't think so. Plus, you got a new regime there. You got a new GM. You got a new head coach. So I think Aside from the owner, I think he could go back.
I think he's going to be. I think he's going to be a Bear. I think the Bears are just going to keep him. Why not? Like it's a nice third receiver. You have an offensive head coach now. You have a second year quarterback who wasn't very good as a rookie. I think Allen's going to be in Chicago, but time will tell. A Colt fan says, we will take Devontae on a one-year deal. The problem is, Colt fan, is that you don't have a quarterback that can deliver a catchable ball to a wide receiver. You see the Colts are interested in to fight with Anthony Richardson? Daniel Jones, another guy who can run real well and can't throw the ball.
Did they really?
That's what Rich Eisen's hearing.
Yeah, I didn't see that. I thought Minnesota, he was going to be their backup plan if J.J. McCarthy wasn't ready. I thought that they were going to keep him in tow. They're kind of in waiting in the wings, and then he would be the guy to bridge the gap to J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do. Offseason is going to be fun. 713-780-ESPN. Let's overreact to the two balls that Jose Altuve played in the outfield the other day. 713-780-3776. It's the Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Houston's independent voice for sports, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We're back with the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Wildcat Golf Club for ESPN Houston's Occasional Invitational. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Thank you to Carbach, Brown Bag Deli, and Valencia's Tex-Mex Garage for supplying the food and drink for today's event. Also, thank you to Houston Powder Coaters, Game Day Men's Health, Gulf Coast Chevy Buick GMC, HR&P, Access Vascular Health, Dream Rate Mortgage, Aqueduct, Beatbox Burritos, and Amex Pharmacy. Thank you to everybody. Thanks to everybody who played, too, and braving the rain this morning and then the wind, this damaging wind this afternoon. Jose Altuve, actually, this text real quick first. Does everyone playing in the Super Bowl get a Super Bowl ring or just the winning team? Name withheld in case it's a dumb question. Texter, there's no dumb questions. There are only dumb people. That's how the saying goes, right? No. You have to win the Super Bowl to get a Super Bowl ring. They might give, like, a conference championship rings,
yes,
but
yes.
Super Bowl rings go to the Super Bowl winners.
I believe Andy Kalu has mentioned that in the past, that he got a ring for winning the NFC. But, yeah, I don't think you don't get a ring for being runner-up in the Super Bowl.
I mean,
yeah.
I imagine they would because the Astros have gotten ALCS rings even even when they didn't win the World Series. But, yeah, it wouldn't be a Super Bowl ring.
Yeah. All right, 713-780-ESPN. So, Jose Altuve, Joe Espada is saying there's a really good chance that Jose Altuve plays a majority of his games in left field this year. Here was Jose Altuve talking to the guys on MLB Network about – playing left field, and also the biggest challenge of moving to left field.
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge is going to be not talking to anyone. You know, at second, I'm talking to Jeremy and talking to the first baseman, whoever is playing first that day, and even talking to the umpires. Someone gets on base and talking to them versus left field, you're lonely there.
So right.
Not talking. I'm pretty sure I'm going to get some interaction with the fans,
yeah.
But we'll see how that goes.
There you go. Jose Altuve. He's the thing that is his biggest challenge is the loneliness that comes with playing the outfield position.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think somebody else made the comment that if he's not talking to somebody, that the way he bites his nails, he won't have any nails left by the second week of the season because he's constantly chewing on his nails. But, we can all say tongue-in-cheek that everybody's going to be watching everything that Jose Altuve does. But, yeah, the least of my worries is if he doesn't have enough people to talk to, because we all know that the fans are going to have plenty to say to him no matter where he is on the road.
I've seen the radical take that they don't want Jose Altuve playing left field because they don't want the visiting fans to say words that might hurt his feelings.
Stop
which
it.
Is, yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it. I've
really?
Argued with people about it on the Twitter.
That's
yes.
ridiculous.
I agree. I agree.
God.
I don't think that heckling bothers pro players, really.
No, they're major league professional players. They're used to it.
There were two plays of Jose Altuve of interest. The first one was the ball that Guillermo booted that got into left field, and then Altuve tried to throw the guy out at the plate. Victor Caratini was in full spring training mode, let the ball go by him. Runner advanced. Altuve got charged for an error. And then he had the catch that we all saw onto the warning track. Brian said that he ran into the wall. No, he brushed against the wall. He kind of touched it with his hand. But what did you think of those two plays?
I think I think we talked about this. We know that every play the guy makes, good or bad, is going to be hyper-scrutinized and overanalyzed. And it's ridiculous, but it's true. I was encouraged by the fact that at least the way he turned on the ball, saw the ball, and got to the ball against the wall, that was a kind of play that I was like, okay, well, he doesn't look like he's going to embarrass himself or the team going out and chasing after baseballs so far. Even the one that he charged, I was a little bit most concerned with, like, could he put anything on the baseball, you know, coming in, charging with a running start. I wasn't disappointed that the ball came in at a pretty good rate of speed. Yeah, it went up the line a little bit. But overall, I'm fine with all of this because it's happening now. It's happening in spring training when it's supposed to happen, when you get the kinks out and you figure out what you can and can't do. So overall, I was encouraged with both plays.
Yeah, the throwing error to me was more like kind of know-how of the position. I was actually encouraged with the zip a little bit too. Like, there was a little more zip on that ball than I thought. Now, what a good throw. It was inaccurate, you know, got by Caratini, right, all of that. But I thought that the catch was far more impressive and encouraging than the throwing error was discouraging. And I think that we do need to be realistic in the whole, like, yeah, Altuve's going to have some gaffes that look really, really bad.
Look, yeah, it's going to happen. It's bound to happen. We talk about a guy that's never played the position before in his life, and we're doing the same thing when we're talking about rookie quarterbacks and guys getting their first chances to do, you know, to play in the league and do things. Reed Sheppard's going to make mistakes. C.J. Stroud made mistakes his first year. Jose Altuve is going to be like a rookie as it relates to defense playing left field for the Astros. He's going to screw up. He's going to take the wrong route to a ball, or he's going to misplay a ball, or do what he did the other day and have a throwing gaffe. But overall, it's a work in progress, and I think that he'll make progress throughout the year, and you keep the bat in the lineup, so I'm fine with it.
See, I could actually see Altuve making a lot of those plays where he, like, throws to the wrong bat. Because what do we know about Jose Altuve? Like, what is his biggest weakness other than defense at second base? It's like being very, very aggressive on the bases, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, unnecessarily going first to third when he has no chance. Like, getting picked off on the bases, being very aggressive on the bases. I have a feeling, and look, I'm pro Altuve to left, but I have a feeling that his aggression that we see on the bases is going to carry over with his throwing decisions. I feel like that's where we're going to notice his defensive liabilities more than anything else, is his decision-making on A, throwing the ball, where he's throwing the ball, and then his decision to throw the ball to a specific base because he, like, oversells his chances of getting a very specific runner. I think that's going to be more noticeable than his range or anything like that.
I think the biggest thing, too, is you hope that between Espada and all the work he's done in the past with infielders and the new third base coach that they got from Arizona that's an infield guru, that they both emphasize to Pena and whoever's playing second that they're going to have to be extremely vocal and they're going to have to be on top of it to kind of be shouting out bases and things just to kind of help to alleviate some of that.
All right, 713-780-ESPN. There's people in the booth that are like, figured out they were just on camera, and they're like giggling and walking out of the room now. You can stay in here if you want. You're just going to be on camera, and the Twitchers are going to make fun of you. All right, I'm going to dip out here a little bit early, calling some Houston Cougar Bay. I'm doing the TV. They got an ugly mug like me doing the TV.
I was wondering why you were dressed up.
I have a face for radio. Like, hey, you want to do the? No, I don't know why you're doing that. They must have been desperate. So BMAC and Blankers will carry you the rest of the way. If you won three titles for the Texans, how would you situate those titles? 713-780-3776. It is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom. all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.